Some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
I said before that your prosthetic arm was a fang, but by fitting shinobi tools to your arm, you'll be able to change the form of that fang. Thick shields, break them into splinters. Swift foes, bring them down from afar. Fitting more devices means more ways to slay your enemies. If there's someone that needs killing, there's a proper way to kill them. That's all there is to it.
This is Gary Butterfield.
This is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat. It is an undying favorite.
And this week, we are starting our discussion of the Ashina Outskirts. This is part one, going up to the Chained Ogre.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's still early on in the game. Mm-hmm. We're still feeling out the pace of things, but this is what makes sense now, and we will we'll see how this works out. We have a couple notes early on before we get into it. The first one, before we even get on the subject, is we realize that like a lot of people are probably joining us from Bonfireside Chat, who have joined the Patreon and do not know what else we do.
Yes.
So we wanted to let you guys know.
Yeah. So when you pledged for us, you saw that you pledged to duckfeed.tv, not to Bonfireside Chat. We do lots of shows. As of right now, when you subscribe to us, you get all of those.
So we would just want to tell you what they were. You know, because we don't they don't necessarily, you know, a lot of those have kind of built-in audiences and stuff, and we want to do a better job of introducing people to them.
So the
main show that we do on the network is called Watch Out for Fireballs. You probably heard us talk about it on old Bonfireside Chats. It's probably the thing that shares the most DNA with this. It is like a book club but for games. And the kind of way to start there is just to pick a game that you're very familiar with. For our backlog, we've done tons of episodes. And yeah, just give it a listen. You know, good things. You know, there are some things that kind of share some of that Souls DNA. We did Hellblade, which has a little bit of that kind of combat system, that heavy weighted combat system. We did Symphony of the Night, which has a little bit of that nonlinear kind of Metroidvania exploration. As the nonlinear exploration.
I was gonna say, man. We also did Nier recently, which if you love that game and would take umbrage at us not liking it, you know, maybe save that one for later. However, that is something Nier. the first Nier specifically.
The bad one.
The bad one. But that is a game a lot of people recommended that we cover for Bonfireside Chat. We did it on Watch Out for Fireballs. And you know, we can see a little bit of the line between that. So if you want to hear us talk about kind of a non-standard narrative in games, well, then there you go.
The Witcher 3, something else that people talked about. Doing for Bonfireside Chat before we took the break. We did a four-part series on that. On that show. So yeah, check out Watch Out for Fireballs. Other shows that we do, we have a show that you'll get as a patron called Adaptation Decay, where we talk about how video games have been adapted to other media. We have a show called Everything to Guppy, which is some of them are comedy shows.
Yes,
much more so than Bonfireside Chat is, right? So like you know, Everything to Guppy is a comedy show. Abject Suffering, those are both our kind of comedy. Those Zamros Kids,
yes,
are comedy shows.
So
that's if you think that we are funny. We understand not everybody does. It is quite all right. But those are comedy shows. One dealing with the Binding of Isaac series of games. One dealing with kind of using bad games as a springboard for improvisation and meandering. And one using the local news and decades of sibling abuse as a springboard for comedy.
Radio Free Midworld is going to be coming back here pretty soon. That is a deep dive into the Dark Tower series of books.
Days of Future Cast, which is me and Jeremy Greer, who does Don't Give Up Skeleton, which you may listen to, and frequent guest of this show, talking about animated Marvel stuff and X-Men animated series and movies. So comics.
And of course, Monster in My Podcast, which is our comedy show about different monstrous manuals.
So just individual monsters and tabletop games. But again, a comedy show. So the kind of the most DNA with this show is Watch Out for Fireballs, I believe, probably. And then, you know, Radio Free Midworld, a little bit of that as well. But yeah, so just check that stuff out. We realize that you, when you patronize us, you probably got a huge glut of just stuff in your feed. We don't have a way to separate that out. We mentioned that last episode.
Yeah.
Patreon doesn't have that integration yet. So we know you have all that stuff, but we want you guys to be able to choose what you might decide is worth checking out.
Yes.
Secondly, before we get onto things, you know, the Sekiro coverage is an ongoing concern. We are playing through it as we go. I'm at on my first playthrough. I'm at the end boss. I started a new playthrough to play along with the show. And because it's an ongoing concern, there are some stuff that we miss from time to time. In the last episode, when we talked about the shrine, we did not talk about the little path to the cave with the one-way secret passage that's not open yet.
Oh, yeah.
So just in terms of stuff we missed, there is a small cave with a wall that has the shape of a ninja that you can press yourself against, but it says it's blocked from the other side. We will learn more about that, and it is kind of interesting that it's there. But once we open it, but we have a little ways before that opens up.
Yep. So, if we don't hit something, now, expect us to hit it later. And if we don't hit it later, write in, let us know.
Yeah. Let us know for sure. Cause it, like I said, it is an ongoing concern. We're still getting, you know, we're still exploring it.
Yeah.
So it's one of the differences, you know, some people I saw online, some people expressed disappointment that we're, doing the kind of, we don't know the total number of episodes. That's because we're still playing it rather than trying to mainline it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that some of my mixed feelings on this game improved a lot when I stepped away from the final boss. Like, it would not have made me like the game more if I was trying to beat it in 4 days before we even recorded about it.
Yeah.
Like, taking my time with this has only helped my opinion of it.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, I think it will make for a better show that we are taking this kind of slow down approach, but it does mean a couple things are hazy. It's not absolutely up in the air, just a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, if people are looking for ballpark, more than 10.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. More than 10, less than 20.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll do some specials and things like that perhaps as they occur to us, but yeah, that's where we're at.
Yes.
So yeah. What did we cover last time, Cole?
Well, last time we played the opening of the game. We witnessed Wolf's failure to protect his young master, the child, Kuro, the precociously mature Kuro. Wolf, he failed to protect him from being kidnapped, which is kind of what his one job. But he wakes up with this strange new prosthetic arm near a strange sculptor. And from there, he begins his quest to rescue the child.
And we talked about the NPCs that end up here. One of the things that I did since then is I rewatched the cutscene when you beat the very first boss at the end of the tutorial. And it's interesting because it's possible to do so. I haven't done it myself yet. I really want From to bring back rewards for doing that.
Yeah.
And it actually is a little bit lousy. Like, somebody from off screen throws a shuriken at you, which you deflect, and then he uses that opportunity to cut off your arm while you're not looking.
Yeah.
And then that's it. You get a unique cutscene and everything, but it's pretty frustrating.
What if your reward for beating that guy was that your arm is never cut off and you have to play through the rest of the game without the shinobi prosthetic?
That's actually would be amazing. Like, as a challenge mode.
Yep.
You know, they just give you a regular grappling hook, but you don't get any of the tools because you're so good at it.
Yeah.
It'd be like in Dishonored when you refuse the outsider, you know, in the beginning of Dishonored 2. That'd be awesome, actually.
Yeah.
You're so good. You deal with it.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you won't grow to rely on this arm. So that's what happens. We are in the dilapidated temple, which we already mentioned, and we're getting ready to head out. However, the bridge is out. We can't just make a direct path.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. Because the game is still, it is still tutorializing us. We just got the shinobi prosthetic and, this is our introduction to grappling.
Yes. The way grappling works in this game, we mentioned before, it is, you get a little symbol. It is a circle. If it's something you can grapple up to. It is a triangle of something you can kind of grapple through, kind of swing on like a Tarzan, like a various Tarzan.
Yeah.
And it grows in size and solidity as you get closer to it.
Right.
This first one you don't have to jump to, but the next one you do have to.
Right.
There's actually like a really great, I replayed this. And again, one of the things we talked about was intending to pay more attention to the levels in this game than a lot of the discourse is. And I was very impressed by this very opening landing that you go to. This first grapple point you don't have to jump to. The second one, once you get up to a little landing, there is a second little grapple point to where you, first of all, you get to see kind of the lay of the land,
mm-hmm.
Including areas we won't visit for quite some time.
Yeah, because like this path we're on like ends at a castle, and then we can kind of see where it doubles back across this chasm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Super cool. You also, you have to make another jump, and this one is very specific. There are two grapple points on a tree, one of which you can reach from where you're standing, but there's one that when you're standing there, you'll see the next one,
mm-hmm.
and it's only half filled in. So you can make the thought, like, maybe I need to jump to this.
Yeah.
And you can choose which of those two you go for. Exceedingly clever.
Yep.
And then we end up in this little landing, and during this next little part, it's going to show you all of the different ways you can do a stealth kill.
Yeah.
All of the stealth kills are possible here.
Yeah.
In this first little set of three dudes.
It is incredibly well done. And along with that, it also, you know, like at this point, you know, when I first started playing the game, I had not really mastered the head-to-head combat. The game is going to kind of smack you down if you attempt to do that without really having your chops up. Like it is, I mean, for me, this was a little bit of a process. The design of this aided along the process of kind of throwing off some of my assumptions about this being a Souls game, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's one of those things too, as my kind of opinions on this game evolve, and I do this revisit, it does become less about the game being overall too difficult, which I do think that it wouldn't lose anything from chilling out with that, and more about it being an inconsistent teacher.
Right.
And here where it's teaching very well, and it's teaching you to, it knows that you are probably don't have your one-on-one combat chops
right.
down. So it's teaching you the different ways to stealth kill here in a really, really elegant fashion.
Yeah.
It's just somewhere along the line, it shifts gears and it becomes a less elegant teacher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's probably worth a longer discussion. Like, should it be a game's goal to teach you throughout? Right.
Yes.
Like, because these early levels, you can tell, like, you can actually just, like, you know, we break it down bullet point by bullet point. Like, the goal of this is to teach you to do this thing, and that stops being of value.
I almost think that almost anybody who I've ever talked to who works in games would say that it is a game's job to teach you how to play it kind of throughout. And that's, you know, this just, it still ends up becoming a thing about the levers, you know, just being like even here, like, so on my second playthrough, I did, like, I aced all the bosses.
Yep.
Right. And I'm not becoming everything I hate where I'm saying, well, they're actually easy because I did that. Like, I still remember the many, many times it took me to fight the end boss of the area we're talking about here, like beat the ogre. Right.
Yeah. You did it, and it's in your hands now.
It's in my hands now. And that's what makes me think, like, maybe this game was not good at, maybe all of those loading screens and deaths. Like, if the game only has one tool to teach you, which is you die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and try again. Is that good teaching?
Right.
You know, in general, I think that Sekiro is getting a little bit too much credit for being a good teacher.
Yeah.
When what people really are saying is that it definitely has a distinct teaching method.
Yeah.
Which is throwing you into the deep end of the pool, except that they know that you can just drown over and over and over.
Yeah.
Like, imagine like a cursed child.
Okay.
That can just drown. They can never die.
Right.
But you continuously throw them in the pool. And then you fish them out, and then when they wake up, you throw them in the deep end of the pool. Like, eventually they'll swim.
In this world, why hasn't the government taken this child away from you? Not so much for its protection, because obviously it's not really hurting it, but to study it.
Yeah, to dissect it.
To see if we can make a serum of its blood. Yeah.
Like, if we are the villains from an X-Files episode that are going to dissect Kuro and get his blood into the hands of Big Pharma.
Yes. No, I'm sorry. I interrupted you for a shitty joke, but it's throwing you into the deep end over and over again until you eventually learn to swim. And it just kind of depends. Like, does it just depend if you forget the pain of drowning in this metaphor?
Yeah, exactly. Like, is it a thing where you just drown so much that you just don't mind that you're drowning?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there something that they could do to, like, teach you some basic strokes? And I think that there actually is. Like, there's a couple later bosses that I would position very differently. There's a couple of structural things I think are kind of big missteps in this that are leading to a lot of the frustration that I had with it. So at the very least, like, you know, people who have expressed any kind of trepidation about the season being too negative, at the very least, I think that this will be very constructive. Like, I have a lot of just like, boy, like, here's at least like an idea firing from the hip about how I wish this had been done.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't feel like just throwing my hands up and being like, man, I wish they had just thrown the whole thing out.
Yeah.
It's more just like, put this mini boss earlier and make not everything kill you in two hits.
Yep.
And it just would have been a more pleasing learning experience.
yeah,
you know, all around. We're going to run into that in this episode as well.
Yeah.
So this very first area where you're looking down, you see this, you're looking at the road that goes towards Ashina. That is where Kuro is at. And there are several gates along the road,
yes,
with enemies patrolling or posted along the way.
Right. And this area, like we said, it is designed to put you into these stealth kills, specifically because there's a high road and a low road. You've got the road right in front of you, but you also have kind of these hills or these cliff sides up to the right where there are fewer enemies. Mm-hmm. And you can position yourself to kind of take these guys out with really a minimal amount of conflict.
Mm-hmm. This very first guy, which you can take the high road on, mm-hmm, and you can get a drop attack on him. You'll actually get a tutorial for this.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do is you pick up a shard, a ceramic shard here. One mm-hmm of the things I want to do with the season as well is talk about items.
Yes.
Because there is a greater emphasis on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you get a ceramic shard. Ceramic shards don't work intuitively. In this, it says in the description you have to throw them at enemies, not near them.
Right.
But we're so used to throwing a rock near an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
In stealth games, you know, that it feels counterintuitive. But here, right by the shard, is the opening to this gate. You can press yourself against the wall, throw a shard at the enemy, and get your first kind of non-standard stealth kill. If you throw the shard, he will walk down, and you can death blow him from pressing your back against the wall, which is not something I used very often. But again, it's trying to show you the different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
You can do it.
You know, and kind of showing you that, like, you know, kind of like you can roll out of being downed, right? Like, mm-hmm, oh, it is possible to attack out of a bunch of different places.
Yep.
As well.
And it's definitely possible to use items from having your back pressed.
Yes.
And so that's this first one here.
Mm-hmm. I forget specifically what's next, but in this first run, this is where also you get the handful of ash.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. That's the next item, and it's in a fire.
Yeah.
They do some kind of stuff with item placement early on in the game, which they kind of stop doing,
mm-hmm,
eventually. But here they very much make sense. Like the shard is just on the ground like a shard.
Right.
Brutal burn to shards. If you're a ceramic shard out there, fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like you better when you were a pot.
Yeah, exactly. You don't carry water with me, buddy. Yeah, but the fistful of ash you actually find in the fire.
Yeah.
The campfire here.
This is great. Like, I constantly forget that this exists, but it gives you pocket sand.
Yep. You can throw this in someone's face. It has a very similar effect to a prosthetic,
mm-hmm,
that we'll be getting later. And this, for me, at least in my 1.0 playthrough, I haven't started experimenting with my 2.0 playthrough, are the two items I use the most.
Right.
Were ways to get brief stuns on enemies, not so much to get extra damage, because later bosses recover so quickly,
mm-hmm,
but to get maybe a little bit of damage, but mostly to reposition.
Yeah.
And this works on almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
So use Yo Ash.
Yes. Do not forget that it's there. Like, just like, well, like when you pick up these two items, just put it in your hot yep bar.
Yeah. I mean, the ceramic shards like are much more situational, I think.
Yeah.
But the ash is very useful.
I just, if I've got to put it in the hot bar or I forget that it exists.
That's also very
yeah
fair.
Yeah. But yeah, this is you getting like drop attacks, and there's also some, like up on the high road, there's some tall grass, that you, mm-hmm, that you can attack out of. But yeah, it's kind of showing you, it's laying the arsenal bare in front of you.
Yep. You can run into some dogs.
Oh, here. Yeah. Yeah. You get some doggos, an introduction of these guys.
Yep. Which you will mercilessly
oh, yeah,
kill. You know, Shinobi must remember mercy, except for when it comes to dogs.
Right.
Deserve no mercy.
Right.
You will kill these dogs. I love the way that they handle animals in this game,
mm-hmm,
and typically being down in one hit.
Yeah.
Not always, but often. And them dying or going into death blow mode upon one deflection.
Mm-hmm.
There. Also, when you get some tools, like they go down in one hit. And that was oftentimes a use for these shurikens for me.
Yeah.
Was to clear out doggos so I could fight somebody more fairly.
Mm-hmm. The way they debut the dogs is really good too, because like when you take out one of these enemies that's next to a gate that's open, and they come from around the corner and get, mm-hmm, you. And that next someone area, what's that?
Someone let the dogs out.
Oh,
and
who?
It's our lore journey to figure out who.
Yep. But when you walk further into that section, you get three dogs that attack you at once from different angles too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep.
There's also over on the right of here, on this little cliffside, One, there's a section where there are two guards at the top of a cliff, which allow you to get their attention and do the ledge hanging death blow.
Yeah.
Which I also did not use very often, but it's one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And you can also jump down here to find a cave. There's like a nice little, if you're looking off the sides of things, which you should generally do, and that remains true for the entire game, look to the sides of cliffs that you're on for little caves or little lanterns. Mm-hmm. There are areas that you'll get to later or can get to now.
Yeah.
And this one, there's a little cave with a sugar, our first sugar item.
Yeah, yeah. Now, let's talk about these, because you get sugars and you get balloons, and these...
It's a clown party.
What's that?
It's a clown party.
Yep.
No, it's all candy and balloons for Sekiro.
Yeah. But these give you, like, temporary advantages, specifically for, like, loot and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of depending on which one they are. So the first sugar you run into is one that decreases your vitality damage that you take.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on in this area, I believe you'll get one that increases your attack power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Useful. Again, it is super easy to fall into too good to use. Maybe don't.
Yeah. I find that the temporary use, buffs in this are very tricky mm-hmm. as a prospect, right? They only last for 30 seconds. And you can get a skill to increase that, but you can only increase it to 45.
Right.
So they don't last very long. And you do, in a game where you are, it feels like the designed first experience is to beat your head up against the boss many times
mm-hmm.
and die many times.
And then resort to the weapon or to the items.
Well, even then, like if you're resorting to this item, like it's a very razor thin margin where the item will make the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like it can, but you have to be confident enough to get to that point. Like I can get good enough at this boss where this item will actually make the difference between success and failure. As opposed to just trying it willy-nilly and experimenting with it and then getting, you know, oh, like, I just wasted that because I died in two hits because it's a Sekiro early mini-boss, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I find there are a couple things, like, with that, and we'll get into this when we start talking about tools in this episode that you get, that do discourage, like, experimentation with those things.
Yeah.
When I have used sugars in this, it has been, I don't think I've ever had it, like, make the difference. Like, I've used them and died. I've used them and succeeded, but there were times I would have succeeded anyway or died anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it is a very narrow kind of corridor in which they make a difference, it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a big fan of these. But that might change as I go through 2.0 playthrough.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like they have high kunai potential. Well, kukri. They have high kukri potential.
Yeah,
it just in terms of being like, oh, this is make or break in this one particular situation.
Yeah, and this doesn't go for all of the things. Like later, we'll get a buff item called Divine Confetti, and I realize that does actually make a make or break difference.
Yeah, yeah.
With many of the bosses.
Mm-hmm.
It's also one of these things where they are a high value treasure.
Yeah,
just from positioning, like this one is hidden on a cave on a cliffside. It's surrounded by torches, like it's by itself.
Yeah, yeah.
The kind of lore between these, there is a monastery, these monks that we'll run into later,
mm-hmm.
who kind of spread these throughout the land here. And you take these different stances based on the person. So it's either Akko, Ungo, there's a third one as well.
Mm-hmm.
Name is escaping right now. But you bite down on the candy hard, you take the stance, and you deal with this like flood of memories.
Yeah, yeah.
That come back. Mm-hmm. And that is how you get the buff.
Yeah. And that is how monasteries subsist in real life too. Not mm-hmm. not different stances, but like, yeah, you know, they just they make stuff that they sell, and oftentimes yep. it is delicious fudge. At least it was down in Cincinnati and Kentucky.
The church near my house hands out Malamars, and if I bite down hard and think about Malum and take the Malum stance, yeah. I get a buff to my blood sugar for, you know, probably about 45 minutes.
Probably, so, yeah. Yeah. But this kind of, I mean, for me, this run ends when you get to your first guy with the rifle.
A little bit of
a rude awakening. And also, I don't think guns were here yet.
No, yeah. No, they're definitely not. Like,
yeah.
We got a couple hundred years before there should be guns,
right?
the thing about the guns in this game and gunplay in general is that you can block bullets.
It's so ridiculous.
Like, yeah, you just have to, it's very counterintuitive. Like, yeah. You just have to know, like, okay, this is just anything else, you know?
Yeah.
So that kind of, as you continue forward, through here through another kind of gatehouse to get that. Yeah. Up on the right of this gatehouse is when you run into our first giant rooster.
I love these things so much. So much love,
kill a lot of the animal kingdom in this.
Yeah. So much love and care went into the way these things were animated. Like somebody really wanted to sell that this was a big old gangly chicken.
Well, and it really goes to underline how scary roosters are.
Yes.
Like if a rooster did that flying thing at me that these things do, like that'd be it for me.
Yeah.
I'd be done. You know, like I gotta go.
Yep. No, that's it.
I'm retire the program.
Please point me to the nearest cemetery.
I'm done.
Yeah. But like, so what's ridiculous about these things is they're not really a challenge, you know, like any of the animals, they go down. I don't know why they're here except to communicate to you that there are monsters in this world. Like just to remind you, like, yeah, you've been fighting a lot of like brigands and stuff, but like maybe, just maybe, there is going to be a giant version of an animal. And the world's going to get just a little bit more magical for that moment.
Yeah. It feels like it juices the enemy variety a little bit.
Yeah.
The direct translation on these guys' name is military rooster, which to me implies that they're actually trained, you know, on purpose, which is, I don't know.
Like war elephants?
Yeah, like war elephants, but just like a military. All I could think about on this thing was eating its chicken wings, because they would be huge. Like it'd be like a turkey drumstick, but without that gross, like gamey, you know, greasy turkey meat.
But without it? I think that the size of this, because it's not just the meat that gets bigger, you also have like the sinew and stuff.
Oh sure, big sinew. in the pocket of big sinew. Big sinew. Like hello. Yeah, I don't know. I still would give it a shot though. Yeah. As far as Sekiro things I'd like to eat, you know, it goes sculptor than this. So.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Maybe dog. But he this is just here as like an amuse-bouche.
Yes.
Of there being some weird stuff, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No. But this gatehouse, you know, it's ruined, right? You know, just has not been treated well. And inside there's a corpse, and you actually find your first shinobi tool in here.
Wait, it's worth noting, too, like the way you get in here is through a hole in the roof.
One of the ways you can get in is through the hole in the roof. Yeah.
Yeah. There's multiple ways to get in. Like, I love the way that early on the game is signaling you to look for other methods of ingress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, we get our first tool.
Yeah. The shuriken wheel.
Mm-hmm.
I love that these are just freestanding tools that you can get that that the sculptor is going to repurpose to fit your weird ass like corner case usage scenario.
Yep, super arm.
Yeah.
We have to go back
right
to do this, and one reason this ends up making sense, I think one of the reasons why they want you to go back here is it is possible that you did not rest at the shrine,
right?
Did not spawn Emma. We talked about Emma, but Emma does not show up there until you rest and come back. Until you rest.
Yeah.
So
she's important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you're gonna want to upgrade that gourd.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, and we're gonna be able to soon.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk to the sculptor to get this, and we get a little bit of the sculptor's backstory, and we get kind of his philosophy on these tools.
Yes. You know, I like what's notable to me, we get a little bit more kind of context on why this temple is so full of crude Buddha statues. Mm-hmm. You know, like as he is talking about this and as he's saying like, hey, you know, this is going to be a really good, you know, if something takes to the air, you can strike it down, you know, with a loaded shuriken. And he actually has to stop himself. So I must calm myself. The more I speak of bloodshed, the more demonic my sculptures will become.
Yeah. And that is why he is sculpting all these little Buddhas, attempting to eventually sculpt the peaceful Buddha,
right,
and not the hateful one. It'd be like if you were making a bunch of Marios out of Sculpey and you kept making ones where he had the invincibility star and you wanted to stop making hateful Mario, you know, and start making peaceful Mario.
Yeah.
But he's also, I think we mentioned this, he's missing an arm as well. And when he sculpts, when you come across him, when he's doing this, he's holding the sculpture with his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And carving with his hand, he's also missing an arm.
Yeah. And like the arm that you have, it used to be from, you know, like he used to wear it. Like he even says when he gave it to you, like, oh yeah, you know, it's wondrous, but it's useless for carving Buddhas, so you can just take this if you want, it's fine.
Yep. Little does he know, you're going to get the carve tool. It just perfectly carves a peaceful ass Buddha, the most peaceful Buddha you've ever seen in your life. This is on its way.
No take backs.
Yep, you can just shoot them out and fire them at your enemies for big damage. Throw a big Buddha at you to totally knock out my foes.
Yep.
Other little detail thing that I missed that I noticed when on this replay that I didn't notice the first time were all the little charms that are pasted up on the outside of his temple.
Yeah, the wards
there. Yeah. Those are interesting.
Yeah.
So we get the loaded shuriken. And I think one of the things for this game we should probably do is when we get a new tool, let's talk about the uses for it and such.
Yeah.
Like kind of tool by tool.
Let's do it because, I mean, this one feels pretty obvious, right?
Mm-hmm.
The game outright says, yeah, if something's flying, go ahead and use this. In my experience, it was a way to like one hit kill something because if something's flying, it's probably not going to be that durable anyway. If it doesn't, then it downs them so you can get up close.
Yep. Definitely, one shots most animals. There will be more enemies that fly. So this is kind of a counter to a jump attack or a counter to a flying attack. There are a couple of other little like edge cases with it. One thing about the mechanic system in this game is that when you stop doing damage to them, their posture starts recovering.
Mm-hmm.
This does very little damage when it's unupgraded, but does kind of reset that recharge meter.
Yeah.
So if somebody tries to retreat from you and you're trying to apply pressure, you can hit them with a shuriken often enough and kind of stop that from going down.
Yeah. No. I also noticed that like this is weirdly effective against somebody who's trying to use range combat on you. Like if they're not in a posture where they can deflect it, it's not going to do a ton of damage, but it will kind of like take them out of that animation to stop them from getting a shot off on you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There are some upgrades to this. Most of them with this one do additional damage.
Right.
And that is either do damage through a guard or do damage if you charge it up. Like it spins and will kind of do like a small amount of damage over time.
Yeah.
There are a couple of different ones that are a little bit more unusual. There's one that allows you to throw money at it. One that is a version of a boss's attack that we will run into later.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to spoil just yet. Things like that. In a general sense, the upgrades for tools I have not spent tons of time on.
Right.
I know that they can be useful and such, but I'm not. Most of the people who in the Slack who are doing that are going for trophies.
Yeah.
Trying to upgrade them all. I just have not done that. And you can get with the basic versions of these, you can get really far.
Yeah.
So
I've not really kind of gone down those roads. If you upgrade to the part, if you upgrade to make it so that you throw money instead of these shurikens, is there a way to like choose not to do that and say, I'd like to throw shurikens now, please? Or are you always down that path?
You can swap between different types.
Cool, cool.
So once you have different kind of iterations of these, you can swap between them.
Yeah.
So. Yep. Yeah. And even that one, even the money one, it the longer you hold it, the more you spend.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you want to spend a lot, so Gilgamesh will use Zantatsuken.
It's very, like, I imagine that's got to be a thing in Japan, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, it pops up money. So much. Yeah.
Yeah. Throwing money is definitely a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
If Final Fantasies have taught me anything.
Yeah, I mean, even Meowth does it. Like,
yeah, exactly. Like, even Meowth does it, guys.
Yeah.
Peer pressure.
Get with the program.
The this is a program. Cool. Okay. I generally always have on my bar for dealing with animals.
Yeah,
you know,
it deploys so quickly too. Like some of the others, it requires like a long lead up. Like something that you can kind of like throw in between attacks as you're closing distance. Again to kind of reset the posture recovery time. Like that just feels more universally useful. And weirdly, I think that like upgrades that increase the damage are almost beside the point of like where this would be useful. Right.
That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah,
for sure. Like not everyone will agree with that.
Yeah.
But that was my experience as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. It's also, there's a really good skill that allows you to chase in, your prosthetic move. We'll talk about skills a little bit later. But you can shoot them and then you can kind of do a dash that follows your shuriken out. That is very useful.
Yeah.
That just allows you to close distance very quickly.
Yeah. Do you hop on top of it and surf? I've never actually used that.
No, I wish. You just dash forward really fast. Right. But I wish you did surf. So.
Yeah. But this is good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So now that we have that, we can head back towards and positioned right after the shuriken is our first mini boss. You might think that this is a mini boss you will use this on, but it is not.
No. In fact, you really don't want to. Mm-hmm. If you have gotten this guy's attention from a distance, you will put yourself at a marked disadvantage.
Yep. When you are fighting General Naomori Kawarada.
Yes. So this is the first of many of this kind of guy that we're going to fight. We've got these generals. He's big. Like, all these generals are almost always like two heads taller than Wolf is. He's wearing demon armor, like a samurai ought to. And he's our introduction to perilous attacks. Our mechanical introduction to them, we actually saw these with the first boss when we fought Genichiro back at the end of the tutorial.
Yes, but we didn't know what they were.
Right.
We just saw a symbol on the screen, then we died.
Right.
Generally here, we know what they are, and the game actually teaches us about them. There's a little tutorial pop-up. One of the first mods that popped up for this on PC is getting rid of those tutorials, because they are always there on replay.
Yeah.
But once you know what they're having, and we kind of talked about this in the generalities, but they introduce these relatively slowly. I've never seen his grab. I have only seen his sweep attack. I did not know he had the grab. I thought that they were giving you one and then grab with the next guy.
Nice, got
it. Then, okay, yeah, I didn't see that. But that symbol will flash on the screen, and then you kind of have to read the animations to know what he's doing.
Yeah.
So he has a sweep. The way you counter a sweep is you jump, and if you tap jump again, you'll do a Chun-Li head stomp.
Yeah.
To do posture damage. You can also just jump away or dodge away.
Yeah.
A lot of the time and get away.
God, that head jump is so satisfying.
It's really good. Yeah. Like, it took a while to get used to it, but it's great. Mm-hmm. And he also has a grab attack, which just does tons of damage. And keep in mind, at this point, you have one Estus charge.
And it's not very good.
And it's terrible.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You have one broken wheel on this car.
Right.
So this guy was a big challenge to me initially.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can get that sneak attack on him to do half his health, but then you still have a boss fight.
Right.
With him, and I ran around like a crazy person, just getting in slashes when I could and retreating to heal a lot. One of the things I like about this is there's no boss fog for these mini bosses. Sometimes there is one to go forward,
right,
but there's
right.
not often one to go backwards. So I could just go back and rest at the shrine and try again.
Yeah, without having to pass through the loading screen, without going through that particular onerous veil.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
No.
Onerous Veil is a good good Bloodborne 2 area.
Yep. No. Yeah. But this is a very generous kind of encounter, all told, because even though you are getting these perilous attacks that are going to pretty much one-shot you, it takes place in a big arena, so you can run around like a dipshit.
Mm-hmm. With lots of areas to escape to.
Yes.
Like, you can run, and he's also optional. Like, right. you know, spoiler, you want to fight this guy. The reward you get is well worth it.
Yeah.
But if you're not up to it, you can bypass him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if you're fighting him basically in a big bowl, and you can always just grapple up to safety to, like, get your bearings or regain your composure. Like, yeah, his posture is going to heal, but
his like, health won't.
What's that?
Yeah. But his health won't.
Right. Right.
So that tension between the two, like a permanent health bar and an impermanent health bar, is in effect.
Yes.
With this guy. Like, I don't think the game is doing a good job of teaching you that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know that now that I played the game.
Right.
And understand that. At this point, when I fought him the first time, I certainly did not understand
the stakes felt too high to retreat.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. The stakes are too high in general. Like, this guy kills you in too many hits. The next boss definitely kills you in too many hits.
Too few hits.
Or too few hits. Yeah.
Yes.
Too few hits. But, like, going back and knowing what he is, he feels generous in retrospect, even at the time when it felt like...
He felt like a wall. Like, I realized, oh, I can bypass him. I'm going to bypass him temporarily until I feel like I can, at the very least, counter or deflect the hits that he's going to put out, you know, like, let alone figure out, like, which ones I can dodge and how I ought to.
Yeah. For sure. I definitely just beat my head up against him. It wasn't forever, right? Like, this guy, next guy took me quite a while. This guy did not take me that long. But I did decide to beat him now.
Yeah.
Even though when I talk about being a little skeptical of the teaching ability of this game, I didn't do it right.
Right.
You know, I didn't fight him the correct way. I didn't come out of it feeling like I knew more about the game system. I feel came out of it like a squeezed out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? You know, it felt good to get past him, and you get a really significant reward. You get a prayer bead, which are your heart containers.
Mm-hmm.
You get 1/4 of an upgrade, but most importantly, you get a gourd seed.
Yes. And this you can take back to Emma. And she uses that to upgrade your gourd. So you at least have 2 charges, even if those individual charges don't really do much for you.
Yeah, or not very much. Even just psychologically, that's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
I imagine a lot of people died here. You know, as much as people maybe don't want to admit it, I bet you a lot of people died here.
No.
And the first time you die, something interesting happens.
Right. So in the normal course of play, when you die, you'll lay there for like a second, and then you'll see the little, option come up like, hey, resurrect or respawn. I forget what the actual words are, but it's there. Resurrect or die, yes.
If it's resurrect or respawn,
a weird sequel to Skate or Die. But here, before you get that option, you actually get like what feels like a little like vision or flashback or something like that, where Kuro is speaking to you saying, "Loyal Wolf, take my blood and live again." Mm-hmm. And you're offered the chance to resurrect if you so choose.
Mm-hmm. When you resurrect, you come back with partial health.
Right.
I really do think that like it would not have hurt anything to give you full health on resurrect in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Especially early on when your health bar is so short.
Right.
Like coming back with one extra hit feels kind of lousy, mm-hmm. honestly. But it is it's introducing this mechanic. We talked about this in the first episode.
Yeah.
Kind of how this articulates.
Yeah.
The first time you go back and talk to Emma, you learn a little bit about this.
Right.
And she just says that, that's very interesting. The game is actually doing a pretty clever bit of misdirection here. the point which Kuro says, resurrects you, you are led to believe, or at least I felt led to believe, that this was from getting my arm chopped off.
Mm-hmm.
It is not.
No.
So it is actually, and we'll learn about that in 2 episodes from now, pretty much 2 or 3 episodes from now.
Right, right.
We'll learn about that in detail.
But there's there's an important point of data that's even going to be relevant here later on in this episode, where it's like saying, okay, take my blood and live again. Like,
yep. You talk to Emma, and Emma says, that's strange. That could be why you have this white mark on your face. It is very hard to see that white mark.
Yes.
Unless you're like looking for it. So it's pretty subtle.
You can see it in the art.
Actually. Yeah, it's definitely in the art.
Yeah.
But you can not think about it, as you're playing the game pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this opens up that system. It doesn't have to happen here. It can happen earlier, anytime outside of the tutorial. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
After you get past this, we're introduced to kind of our next little set piece.
Yeah.
There.
It opens up. Like you've got this kind of encampment. That's around here, some ruined buildings, some people who have just kind of set up shop. And if you are not careful, this can turn into a huge fracas.
Yes. This is, to me, feels like the game encouraging you to engage with its stealth system.
Yeah.
I've definitely read people who have said that they have found it very fun to like dive in and fight a lot of dudes at once.
Mm-hmm.
I have not had that experience in the game.
Yeah.
I understand that it is possible and manageable. I'd still rather fight guys one-on-one.
The combat sings in duels,
Yeah.
Yeah.
The times I've had to fight things many of them at once, I've just ended up using tools to essentially make it a one-on-one fight.
Mm-hmm.
Here, it's all about, wider patrols. Like, it's kind of teaching you, or at least showing, we keep using Soulsborne as a point of reference. Since Dark Souls 2, enemies have been on patrol
right
from time to time, right? Here the range is just very wide.
Yeah.
There's a little fun little parade walking circles around this area.
Yep.
And it is kind of about chain pulls. Like an enemy, if a lookout sees you, they will make a noise and alert everyone in the area. If you get into a fight, that will make a noise that will attract nearby people. And there are more people nearby than you think.
Yes. They do something really good with the change in elevation. Specifically with like the roughly circular area around this. Like they're doing as much as possible to conceal these enemies and make it feel like they are kind of all coming down on you at once.
Well, and conceal them for a time as well. Like if you actually, if you're role playing this and you're playing this as a shinobi and being sneaky, if you stop and observe, this stuff will show.
Yeah.
Show itself. There are 2 kind of big surprises, one being that parade, the other one we'll talk about in a moment. If you wait, you will see this.
Yes.
If you don't, if you rush in, you will not.
Right.
You will just see that. Well, you mean you'll see it, but
too late. You'll see it when it's coming at you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you can eavesdrop here. You get a little bit of intel. Again, hearing some names that we've heard before, including one that we haven't so much. So one of the soldiers is really doubtful, saying like, "Hey, is this battle gonna shake out the way we think it is?" And the other one, who's the calm master, who says that there's no difference between good things and bad things, yes, says, "Okay, Ishin may be sick. Ishin being the master swordsman who we saw in the opening, but he's still going strong. Genichiro is a terror with the bow. Genichiro is the person who cut off our arm, so he's still in play. And of course, we still have Gyobu the demon. As long as he's with us, no one could ever breach the castle gate. We haven't heard about this third guy, but boy, are we going to get to know him.
We are going to get to know him. it is, he's going to be the end of the next episode. On 2.0 playthrough, I did first try him.
Nice.
But I also spent forever on him the first playthrough.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's he definitely is a lot. and these kind of we talked about this a little bit, the way that they use eavesdropping to tell you what's coming. I think that stuff is almost universally successful.
Yeah.
Sometimes they drop hints through it, and those have been straight up false. Sometimes
I was going to be more charitable and say oblique, but false is also accurate.
There's one that's straight up false that drives me nuts. There's a couple other ones that can be described as oblique. I don't think those are as good, but as just kind of a way to let you know what's coming, I think these are pretty slick. These two guys who are having that discussion, they are on this little overlook with a tent and a campfire and stuff. Around the corner on the bottom is a big boy.
Yeah. We've got ourselves, I don't want to call him an ogre because we find the ogre later. This it's like Mongo from Blazing Saddles. He's just a big, strong oaf.
The design on these guys is one of my favorites in the game.
Well, because they're chubby. Is the shortcut to your heart.
It is. I'm very into fat characters and cats. I still think that this game does not have enough enemy variety or visual interest in their characters generally. So when they do something that's outlandish, I think it's cool.
Yeah.
They are definitely feel quasi human, like how tall they are. Like they're 9 feet tall or whatever. Like they're about as tall as the ogre,
right,
that we're going to run into. But I love the way, and this is a really silly, like very specific detail, I love the way that they are realistically fat.
Yep. Yeah. They got the right sag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I love their belly.
Yeah.
I love the way that it looks deflated.
Yeah. He's attacking you with a gigantic hammer. If you are engaging with a bunch of other people, he's going to come in and you're going to die immediately. And you're going to say, well, what the fuck was that? And I think that like part of that visual design and what makes it really effective is that it exists to intimidate you. And I think temporarily, I mean, for me, the effect was tricking me into thinking that there was nothing I could do about those attacks aside from stay wide of them. No, you can deflect that. And for me, this was a really instructive moment that pretty much anything can be deflected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can also death blow them. Right. And unlike a boss, they only have one health bar. I spent most of my first playthrough never fighting these things.
Right.
Like just always like, oh, there's a big boy. I got to figure out a way around it.
Yeah.
And it became kind of an environmental puzzle as opposed to just a combat challenge.
Well, they just get so hard to isolate, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. The other kind of part of this is there's a sharpshooter lookout, in the central tower here with a rifle. Who has a wider kind of range of vision.
Yeah, yeah.
Very easy for him to spot you.
Yeah, and getting shot will knock you over. Like, that will kind of, like, throw you off the teeth of the gear of whatever kind of duel you're in.
Yep. It also, obviously, will draw attention.
Yes.
No.
Well, no, they had silencers back then, too.
Yeah. They put a rooster on the end. So after you've died a few times, which could potentially happen here, you're introduced to your first rot essence.
Yes. It's like a non-standard death. You know, when you wake up, you're not back at the sculptor's idol. You're actually back at the dilapidated temple. And the sculptor is coughing very, very worrisomely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. He's gotten sick. because of you. We don't, you know, and we can learn as this guy goes on, we can talk to Emma and learn more about it. And basically the idea is, you know, you have your resurrection at a cost.
Right.
It leads to the stagnation, which will overflow onto other people.
Right. I love that idea of overflowing. Additionally, I mean, stagnation, that was a huge thing that Bloodborne, they pretended to care about in Dark Souls 3 as well.
Yeah, Bloodborne, Dark Souls 3.
Yeah. So it's nice to see them, I think, taking that fragment of an idea and lending some kind of importance, because, like, the dragon rot and the sickness, incredibly important to the, like, actual central part of the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You actually get a little item that tells you who is sick.
Yeah.
It's dragon rot colon and then the person.
Right.
And you will get people before you've met them.
Right.
It's not just just your friends. It's like you're tied to them by fate or what have you.
Right.
And sometimes this will actually have a mechanical effect.
Right.
As well.
I mean, just generally it will stop you from advancing their quests if there is advancement to be had.
Mm-hmm. And it also brings down your chance of unseen aid, as we mentioned before. This used to be a different kind of mechanic in the game. They actually had the way it used to work is you would go to Emma and you would give her some of your resurrective power. We talked about that in the first episode. As you beat enemies and fight, you gain resurrection power that fills up these little spheres.
Mm-hmm.
That is how many times you can resurrect. You used to be able to sacrifice that to create a dragon rot cure pellet, which you would have to individually administer to people. Which would have been pretty obnoxious just as far as a travel tax.
Yeah, no, that's something from Pathologic.
Yeah, that's very Pathologic something, actually. Yeah. But they got rid of that.
Right.
Luckily. So now you just do it done in one.
Right.
Yeah. As you get down to the end of this little encampment, there's this burned out house with an old woman inside it and a young man who is blinded, wounded and blinded.
Right. So you can talk to them in either order. So, you know, if you talk to the old woman first, you kind of have to intuit. If you talk to the young man, Inosuke, he, you know, gives you a little bit of exposition. So, you know, first, even though he can't see, he recognizes your voice. He knew you. Like, he at least encountered you before at the Hirata Estate, you know, again, way back in this tutorial. And something that's going to become clear from this is A, it is undetermined how much time has passed since then, and also Wolf does not remember a single detail from what happened after he was after he got his arm cut off.
It's interesting. You know, it suggests kind of this backstory that we're going to find out about very soon related to these two characters, and we're going to find out about that because he says, like, hey, humor my mom. And we talk to the mom. She says, ask if you're her son. I say, yes, she asked you to take this bell charm that she made for the young lord, for Kuro, and she wants you to offer it to Buddha.
Right.
We only have one non-hateful Buddha statue. so we're gonna send it there.
Yes. So you can return to the temple, and at this point, Emma starts, you know, she's not in her usual spot by the door. She's actually tending to the sculptor, and she gives you a little bit of a quest. This is the way that you will... not cure, because it can always come back again, but temporarily
stave off
the dragon rot. Just, hey, like, you know, collect blood samples from people afflicted with this, and so, you know, just tell people cough on this cloth.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Give them your cough cloth and then they'll take care of it.
Yeah.
When you place this bell on that statue, you pray over it and you fall into a new area.
Yeah.
You fall into a memory.
The bell's chime will stir your thoughts and awaken memories from your slumber. And this takes you both into the past. 3 years ago was when the Hirata Estate raid took place. And it is a whole level for you to navigate in a way that defies continuity.
Yes. Yep. There is the time travel stuff in this. The memory time travel stuff, the way you can bring items back from the past is never addressed, and probably for the better.
The key was always there.
Exactly. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
This is a weird structural thing because this area is properly balanced for a bit.
Yeah.
And ends in a boss that you should not. It's ridiculous that the boss of this area can be your first boss.
Yeah.
But we will be talking about this area all on its own.
Yeah.
As one kind of longer episode rather than splitting it up, just because it makes the most sense to kind of put the Hirata Estate stuff all together.
Right.
And you're kind of you will get an advantage if you go back there and poke around now and bring back a couple of Shinobi's tools. which we're not going to do for the purposes of this podcast.
Right.
But just know you can kind of bounce in between the real world and the dream world kind of back and forth.
Yeah.
And that that can help you out.
It'll benefit you, especially if you like me, find yourself getting just kind of like stuck and frustrated, like having someplace mm-hmm. else to go and something else to soften up was good psychologically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Back in the real world, if you head up to this bluff, I missed this the first time. There's kind of a tree you can grapple up to. And if you head up there, we're introduced to our first of this kind of repeating scent of merchants, the Memorial Mob.
Love that name.
I like that name too. I like these guys a lot more with the Japanese voiceover rather than the American.
So like in the American, they're just a little bit like shifty, you know?
Yeah.
Shifty and grave. What's their affect in the Japanese?
They just seem more mysterious than shifty. And I like them more as kind of mysterious as opposed to like, you know, they're not quite like, yeah, we're the Memorial Mob.
Yeah.
You know, but they're just, I don't know.
That you?
Yeah, throwing money. I think that they're better in that version.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
So
yep. But this guy acts as a merchant. Like he can get sick. So wait, can he? No, it's the other merchant who gets sick. Fuck me.
Well, the Memorial Mob guys can get sick.
Okay, cool.
So yeah. I don't know if this one specifically has gotten sick for me. Mm-hmm. Honestly, like when. At least like partway through the game when I would get the Dragon Rot messages, I would not read them.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would just be like, well, if I run into a merchant and I can't use them mm-hmm. or I can't advance a quest line I'm trying to advance, I'll just use the item to cure it.
Right. Right. Use the cough drop.
I would use the cough drop. So, you know, that kind of connection feeling that I think they're going for
mm-hmm.
in this is a little bit missed.
Like, yeah.
I did not feel particularly connected to the merchants.
Yeah.
And most of the randos in the world.
Right, right. Like, one of the first people who got sick after the sculptor for me was an Os guy. And you guy's already in really bad shape.
He's in pretty rough shape, and you never... I went back and talked to this guy at a couple points during the game, and he never had new dialogue.
Right, right.
For me. Like, I think that his quest is to tell you to humor his mom.
Right, right.
And that quest complete.
Yeah. Right. So these guys, the Memorial Mob, they kind of go around to wherever death is happening, and they sell just little offerings for the dead. Really, it's just mm-hmm. items. You know, you can buy your shards, you can buy your ash and things like that. The big ticket item that you can get, also you can get your little gold bags, which are useful.
Mm-hmm.
The big thing that you're going to want to save up for here is an incredibly useful, like at least early game VIP or MVP shinobi tool, Robert's firecrackers.
Yep. Hello, I'm Robert. These are my firecrackers. It blows my mind. I mean, I don't want to, mild spoiler, like Robert is kind of in the game.
Well, like his story is here. It makes a lot of sense, like given his motivation, why he would show up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only misdirect is that they make it sound like Robert came here a while ago.
Yeah. 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 Whereas, not so much. So this is, once we connect this allows you to, and it takes more, emblems. It takes two,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to one, which, the shurikens do, and it allows you to throw firecrackers on the ground. Now the game implies that this, is for animals.
Right.
And one of the weirdest, you know, it very heavily implies this, like all the hinting.
Mm-hmm.
This works on everything.
Yes.
This works on the end boss. Like you can do this to anything in the game and stun it for a second.
Everything will be startled by this.
Yep.
Creating an opening that, at least in Sekiro terms, you could drive a Mack truck through.
Yep. I mean, early on.
Yeah.
And then later, like
later, everything just defies every advantage you could get. Yeah. Yeah.
Every opening is a pinhole.
Yeah.
But early on, this creates big openings and is just so immensely useful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've talked to several people who play through the whole game, and this is the only tool that they use to any real effect.
Yeah.
And I get it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just very good. It is, you know, it is far and above, you know, it's the one I use the most by like a lot.
Yeah. And again, it deploys really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can just throw this out, you know, to give yourself some breathing room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't do direct damage. So it feels more situational than it is. And in terms of signaling, like, okay, they're firecrackers, so they're toys, you know, like give me them blades and shits. No, like this is the real deal.
This is what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting it this early, like I missed it the first time around. Like I said, you had to spot this tree to get up, so I had to come back later.
Yeah.
When I was struggling with the boss and someone said, "Hey, did you get the firecrackers?" And I said, "Firecrackers." yeah, super good. MVP tool.
Yeah.
At least as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. But Robert, you know, just when you read the item description, which is a real refreshing act. I love reading the item descriptions and getting something meaningful. He's a young boy who traveled across the sea from the south with his father, seeking the quote undying so that he could extend his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And later on, you do not give him your blood. So that's unfortunate.
Coward.
Yeah. Not coward. Cough up the blood, coward.
Yeah.
After kind of around this little bend, there's this little area, of outskirts heading up to like another gate.
Yeah. Yeah. They're getting more imposing. Like you're actually like edging into the castle territory almost at this point. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this approach, and there's very little, kind of recourse unless you are very quick at getting out of the way. This approach is covered by a soldier with a rocket launcher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine my surprise.
Yeah. You go, there are rocket launchers in play.
Okay.
Again, very much saying, if this isn't working, try a side path.
Right, right.
And there is this kind of entire side path on the left that you can do to get above him.
Yeah.
Which is a combination of grapple points and tall grass.
Yeah.
And such to get up around him and behind the rocket launcher guy. And then you can go down and get your vengeance on the patrol guys that you missed if you like.
Oh, yeah. So. Well, you're not so tough without your friend, huh?
Exactly. Without your precious rocket launcher.
Yeah.
Behind him, once you get through him, there's an idol near a chicken, and you get to kind of by these stables.
Yeah.
Down below, there are a couple of force ghosts.
Yeah.
There are some force ghosts in this game that is like amongst the sloppier storytelling things, I think, or really? At least like a little on the nose.
it's kind of an idea that feels like it was spit out at 4:55. On a Friday. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, well, fuck it. Happy hour. Yeah. But you're going to go up and you're going to get like a little memory of a conversation that happened here, specifically between Lord Kuro and Emma, you know, and Kuro, being the sensitive, mature little boy that he is, you know, he has recognized this man who had come all this way from Harada, and he feels guilty like about all the people who have died because they happen to be between him and the people who wanted his blood.
Yeah.
Right.
Why are all these people dying on my behalf?
Yeah. He feels responsible for the harm that has befallen them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. We're going to get these in little bits. Like, we'll point them out when you run into them.
Yeah.
I do not know what the in-game explanation is for there being force ghosts.
No.
And memories of things like that. It's just like spirits or something like that. Maybe. There's something I missed, but I felt like this was sloppy. Like, some of the content of them is good and interesting, but
I like it more Kuro.
Yeah, Kuro's great, but I just here's a little play for you. Feels a little bit heavy-handed to me. Yeah. There's a merchant here, Aniyama the peddler, and he's like, "Hey, we met you before that night," and you're like, "I don't know what you're talking about." He's like, "Well, I was a thief then. Maybe you don't recognize me, but now I'm going legit."
Yeah,
and you're like, "No, I still don't remember you." And he says, "Well, okay, if you invest in my shop, I will tell you a little bit about that night." And I thought this was going to be like a Final Fantasy-esque like money sink
same
kind of thing to get increased inventory. And you only do this a couple times though. And then there's a quest you do with him,
right?
To kind of make him a better shopkeep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that first piece of info, Aniyama at least 3 years ago was not a good person.
No.
You know, so he recognizes you. He recognizes you from that night 3 years ago. But it's not because he was fighting alongside you. No, he was part of the party that raided the Harada estate.
Yeah.
You know, saying like, yep. Yeah, the samurai were away because of this battle. So we set the place on fire and we took a bunch of shit.
Yep. And that's why I recognize you from. And you're like, what?
Boo.
You know, me. And he says there's a second piece of info that you can get from him if you buy that. And that is, he talks about a specific tool that you can find in the Harada estate that he saw. So that's all. Again, we have a way to get there. We have the past.
Right.
We can head to. But for now, we're not going to. But again, it's kind of a good idea because after, you know, the next boss we're going to fight is actually weak to that tool.
Yeah. It is a key for his lock.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not necessarily. You can beat him without that. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So you you head on up here, and you hear two soldiers talking about the next boss, which is going to be a kind of a standard thing that happens.
Right.
There's an ogre chained up behind them, and you can hear it rattling its chains and roaring.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, you know, oh, this is actually like, are we okay with this? This seems scary. It's like, well, no, no. You know, we're safe. And if we needed to, we could fight it because it has red eyes, so it's weak against fire.
Yeah.
And that is that tool we can get them from the Harada Estate, but we don't have it just yet.
No, no. You can run to get that, though. There's nothing stopping you. And for the purposes of talking about the boss, it's worth pretending that we do have it. Or, you know, just imagine we did this out of sequence.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you kill these very helpful strangers, and you also want to kill the spear guy who's kind of nearby.
He's kind of hiding. If you walk up to the ogre directly, you'll aggro the spear guy without knowing it.
Yeah.
Which is a big problem. However, you can also kind of run away and take out the spear guy at your leisure.
Yeah, I think this might be the first spear guy that we found, and these guys are tough shakes without the Makiri counter.
I think they're tough shakes with it. Like, yeah. I think as far as classes of enemies, spears are the toughest.
Yeah.
Like, the basic ones that just do a standard thrust with no delayed hit or whatever are not a big deal.
No.
But as far as mini-bosses go, the spear-based mini-bosses, I think, are universally the hardest mini-bosses across the board.
Yeah.
There's a guy in the memory, and there's a guy named Seven Spears that I think is just, like, a nightmare.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So this is our first, this is the third type of unblockable attack.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have the Makiri counter. The Makiri counter allows you to deflect
mm-hmm.
a thrust attack or press forward and circle.
Right.
And it's very specifically forward and circle. It says direction and circle, and that's super misleading. No. I kept pressing to the side or back.
Yeah.
And it does not work.
Yeah.
It's towards them.
Right.
Pretty frustrating, but ends up actually being a really great move once you know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you want to take this guy out, or at least attempt to, so he doesn't become an ad for when you fight the mini boss of this area, the Chained Ogre.
So this guy, he's tied up when you first run into him. He is a big ogre, you know, and just kind of looks like
he looks like a big me.
he's a Bloodborne collection. He's all known for the Bloodborne collection.
Yeah. He's got like a scraggly beard and like long hair.
You can break him free, or you can hit him and he'll break himself free, rather. Right. So you can get in some free hits.
Yeah.
And his whole kind of what he is teaching you is grab attacks.
Right.
He does a lot of wrestler moves, very specifically.
It is so hilarious. I don't know why wrestling move. Like, I know I have internet poisoning because I see wrestling moves and I think, oh, large adult son. I like that's yeah, large exactly. adult son behavior.
This is the largest adultest son. So he does these like wrestling grabs, like either dive grabs or these Hagar style final fight jumping double legged kicks.
Yeah, he'll do elbow drops at you too.
He does elbow drops, which is amazing. Like, oh boy. and there's kind of a couple, so it's really teaching you to avoid grabs
right
from him, because the grabs will just do a unreasonable amount of damage. They can one shot you, pretty easily if you're at anything other than full health. He also has a one grab that is a throw.
Yep. He will throw you off the goddamn cliff.
Yep. He will throw you off the world. big difficulty spike.
Yeah.
Really, really tricky. And it is, he doesn't do very many attacks. Like, it's hard to get a deflection,
right.
like a posture victory from this guy without knocking down his health
mm-hmm.
quite a bit. And he's very tanky. He takes a lot of HP damage.
Right. And like, I never really got a lot of like posture damage into him. Like, you're going to need to like make this an HP victory or a vitality victory. Yeah.
Like, you can get the posture damage from him. It just, you can't deflect grabs.
Right.
And that's most of his attacks. You can deflect everything else, even if it looks like you can't.
Yeah,
like, you can deflect his elbow drops.
Yeah, this guy is he was a real struggle for me, and I specifically benefited from having gone to the Harada Estate not just for the for the weakness, which we can talk about, but while we're talking about the grabs, after he grabs, he leaves himself open, and there will actually be a little icon above him saying like, hey, he's temporarily a grapple point. So we haven't really talked about like in the course of this play, we haven't gotten the skills yet, right? You know, we talked about Makiri counter, but it's really important. One of the first skills you can get from the Shinobi esoteric text is the grappling attack, which you absolutely want, because this lets you attack at the end of a grapple. So normally, if he has a grapple point, like, why would I want to be closer to him? I want to keep my damage. I want to keep my distance. No, this lets you dodge away, like let him open himself up, close the distance with a grapple, get an attack in, and then get out again. Like, it becomes, like, one of the main ways to get him.
If you don't have that grapple attack, doing the grapple thing will still do some posture damage.
Okay.
And still get you close to him to hit him a couple times, because he's usually stunned, like, a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, you grapple onto it and then yank. Mm-hmm. And it kind of puts him off balance for a moment.
Yeah.
But it's better when you have that attack, for sure.
It just lets you combine the motions. You just waste less time getting into position.
If you set him on fire, you stun him for a little bit, allowing you to get some damage in. He's very susceptible to the fireworks as well. He just is very tanky.
Yeah.
And you are kind of led to believe you have to fight both health bars of him. If you can actually leave and get him to de-aggro. Mm-hmm. And then sneak up on him.
Yeah.
But the way he's positioned initially with the enemies around him, you can't really sneak up on him.
Right.
You can, like, speedrunners do it. They do it by using the stealth sugar. Mm-hmm. You know, AKA aspartame.
Yeah, I was going to say, damn it. The
Akko's aspartame. Gokhan's Splenda. That you use on the way up there. So doing it that way, and then also even on the second, you know, so like I said, I've aced all the bosses so far on my second run through, but it's still highly tense because the consequences for failure are so high.
Yeah.
Like, I just really feel like the second mini boss in the game should not one shot you.
Yeah.
And this guy does.
He does.
You know, and yes,
he does it in style.
He does it in style. You have two heals at this point that are both Garbo. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not going to talk about the difficulty in every episode, but I do think that, like, opportunities for rebalance are worth addressing when they pop up.
Yeah.
And this is one of them where, like, this guy did not need to be as tanky or do as much damage as he does, I think. Yeah. You know, and I say that as somebody who has beat him without being hit. Like, right. I still think that first run and this feeling like a wall for a while did not really add very much, and probably contributed to a lot of frustration that didn't help my attitude towards the game really.
Yeah. No. Also, I mean, just like in terms of the number of people who got stymied by this guy, like in the early going of the game, like just like really, oh yeah, ogre. Yep. Ogre.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, no, yeah. No, getting stuck between like an ogre and a drunk place.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
For sure.
Yeah.
After you beat him, you do get a prayer bead. These are going to be things you get for mini bosses, those fourth quarter of a heart container. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes fighting Beast gives you a very specific skill, which is Shinobi Medicine Ranks, which make your gourd more effective. Like there are some you can level up, and there are some you just find.
Right. Only very marginally more effective.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't make a big difference. Like, they need to be in aggregate.
Yeah.
So you need quite a few of them. This opens up a fog wall. This is, as far as I know, this is a mandatory boss.
Right.
I assume so, because speedrunners fight him. Mm-hmm. And we have our next little bit where we have a kind of run up with another mini boss, a couple of other little set pieces, and then the castle wall.
Yeah.
Which we'll go to next.
Mm-hmm. And we're going, not only the castle wall, the horse wall.
Yes. Horse wall.
Yeah.
And that's going to be what we're going to call it for this episode.
Yeah. So thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this. We'll be back next episode with the remainder of the Ashina Outskirts and continuing a pace from there.
Yeah. Go ahead and let it, like I said, we're kind of feeling out this pace. This is about how long we want the episodes to be.
Yeah.
You know, roughly. So that's why we chose this pace. Mm-hmm. We might adjust that as we run into more situations we can shorthand.
No.
You know, like when the game stops being as much about teaching things, we might not be able to say, like, we'll be able to start saying, this is just another standard area with this. Mm-hmm. But early on, I think it's worth pointing out what the game is doing to teach you what it's teaching you.
Yeah.
If you like the show, thank you for your support. We really appreciate it. And you can rate and review it on iTunes if you'd like.
Mm-hmm. So that will only be a feed with the other the older episodes, but it does help kind of draw more people in, especially as they are searching for Souls and Sekiro stuff.
Yeah, and you can also tell your friends about it.
Yes,
we really appreciate that. Check out the other stuff we have on the network.
Mm-hmm.
If you're listening to this, I think that if you like this, there's a good chance you'll like that as well.
Yeah.
And check out the Immortal Unchained episodes as well.
Oh yeah.
Cool Souls like that not a lot of people have played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Check those out. See if that sounds like something that is your jam.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that is probably about it. I
think so.
So, what do they do until next time, Cole?
They should worry not, because death is not your fate just yet.
Umbasa.
And we all pray that we will have far more soon.